Okay, everyone, I want to welcome you to the next installment of the Gamers Confab special holiday edition. And in this edition, I have four special guests, illustrious guests, exciting guests, bloggers all. First of all, I have Corvus Elrod from Man Bites Blog. Welcome, Corvus.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me, Michael.
My pleasure. And I have Mitch Kerpata from Insult Sword Fighting. Welcome, Mitch.
Good evening.
And also joining me is Dan Bruno from Cruz Elroy. Hey, Dan.
Hey, thanks for having me.
My pleasure, as always. And Spencer Greenwood, the youngster on the cast from Noble Carrots. Welcome, Spencer.
Thank you.
Off we go. As you know, this podcast is a modest goal, really. It's kind of a roundup of our favorite games of 08. And as I've noted before, these don't necessarily correspond to what we might think as the best game or the top 10 game or ranking games or anything like that. It's mostly just a very subjective kind of question that I asked you to tell me what game might have meant something to you this year, or just for whatever reason, however you want to measure it, your favorite game. So why don't we start with Corvus? And Corvus, why don't you launch this festival?
All right, you want me just to blurt out the title or
yeah, well, however you like, however you like. I don't have any drum roll queued up where I could give you that. Sorry.
I went all the way back to the beginning of the year to the first game to really grab my attention. And much to my delight, recently on Twitter, I saw people twittering about it enthusiastically still one full year later. The game I chose is Audio Surf.
Yes. So tell me, when you mentioned this game to me, of course, I flashed back to when we were at GDC because you very kindly invited me to a dinner where I got to sit next to the very creator of the game.
Yes.
And he was very impressive to me, and I loved hearing him talk about the game, and I'd love to hear you talk about it as well, because it's a very long-lasting game. I continue to hear people playing it as well.
What makes Audio Surf so brilliant, besides the fact that it's pure indie spirit, you know, single developer... playtesting was done by his wife and his brother-in-law, but Audio Surf is representative of a very simple concept expressed extremely elegantly. It is a low challenge, sort of meditative gameplay. It makes a personal connection because it draws all of its core gameplay right out of your own music library. And it's extraordinarily inexpensive to pick up. It runs quite well on low-end systems. Everything about the game just screams elegance and simplicity. And given that it comes from such a humble origins and made such a huge splash when it was released to Steam last February or March, it just is a game that I think we should be talking about for a long time.
Do you, this is maybe a stupid question, but is there like a particular kind of music or a particular piece of music that you thought would like sort of never work in the game and it actually worked?
I have several days worth of Burl Ives tracks in my- and we don't really need to talk about why, but let's just suffice to say that I do. And I was pretty convinced that there was no way Burl Ives would make compelling gameplay in this musical racer match 3 environment. I just was convinced that it simply wouldn't work. And to my delight, Burl Ives remains some of my favorite tracks to play while cruising the lanes of Audio Surf.
Just the image of him, you know, sort of with all the lights and sort of barreling down the track. It's just something perfectly charming about that.
Yeah. That smiley voice. Banjo singing about men who kill prostitutes because they won't marry them. It's great.
Have any of the other three of you played Audio Surf, by the way?
Definitely not.
No. Okay, well, this is a must do.
I feel like I should have, actually.
Yeah, you in particular, Dan, I would think.
I would have thought so.
Market Dan, research or something.
Yeah, I didn't mention it in the intro, but Dan works at Harmonix and works on Rock Band stuff. And so, yeah. I would imagine the Rock Band gang are familiar with the Audio Surf.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah,
I'll just got on out.
Exactly. I'll have to hit up Steam after this and see what's up.
Well, Corvus, I guess I'm just sort of a softy about these things, but you know, he won an award at GDC, and it just, everything about that experience for me as a real novice at that kind of a conference, you know, it was just such a wonderful thing to see him. He was genuinely moved by it, genuinely excited about it. All of his personal effort and hard work, you know, people were acknowledging, like people he really respects and admires were telling him he made this really good thing. I got a huge charge out of that.
I think this is the perfect time to actually just really quickly mention the Independent Games Festival that happens every year, and it's always independent games. They've got a student games portion of their award ceremony as well. And to my mind, these are the real game awards to keep an eye on, because it's the developers who are going to be big tomorrow. And there's far less studio politics and who you know involved in the games that get picked for the IGF. Right. It's a really great competition, and I think we should all be paying a lot of attention to it.
And by the way, I should have mentioned it originally, but his name's Dylan Fitterer, and he, you know, he's a terrific guy. And I definitely second that recommendation. Okay, thank you, Corvus. I'm going to toss it over to Mitch. And what you got, Mitch?
Well, now I feel like I probably should have played Audio Surf before making this decision. well, I don't know. It's probably no surprise to anybody who reads my blog with any regularity that it was very easy for me to say that at the end of the day, my favorite game this year was Rock Band 2.
Nice choice.
Yeah, there wasn't really anything close, you know. I kind of think that this was kind of a year that was problematic in some ways with games. There were a lot of games that kind of tried new things and did some of it right and some of it not right. And ultimately, the game that was the most fun constantly was Rock Band 2. I'm still playing it. I come back to it, you know, almost daily. I just say, if I can just play one song right now, and it's got to count for something.
Why does it, I don't want to get too much into sort of Guitar Hero versus Rock Band 2, but it seems to me like Rock Band's gathering a terrific amount of momentum. I hear about it so much more than Guitar Hero. Is there a reason for that in your view?
It's probably a few reasons. I didn't play the new Guitar Hero game as much as I would have liked, but when I did play it, the drum pads weren't working very well. So that was kind of all you need to know about how they're doing it. But just since Guitar Hero 3 came out, the entire Guitar Hero experience has sort of, I hate to put it in these terms, but it used to be about the music, man. And now it's about the marketing, and it's about cross promotion, and it's about all this stuff that it was never about, you know, when it was Harmonix's property. And Harmonix hasn't forgotten the kind of games they were making. I mean, it's a pure musical experience. There's nothing all that flashy or fancy about it. And that's the way it should be, because they put the music front and center.
Yeah,
I hate to put it that way because it almost sounds like an insult, but that is kind of the key difference between where Rock Band has gone and where Guitar Hero has gone, is Guitar Hero is trying to be like a video game. Yeah. And that's not an insult I would ever use in any other case, but Rock Band is just completely different. I mean, we talk so much about innovative games, forward-thinking games. There is probably no game more innovative or forward-thinking than Rock Band. I mean, it's got a completely different set of priorities than every other game I played this year, and it's not to mention completely different inputs, and they work so well. I mean, you just get fully lost in this game, whether you're playing one song or whether you're sitting there for 3 hours.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you all saw this story. I think it just came out today, unless I was late getting to it, that there's some sort of measurement that they've been able to demonstrate that basically video games are helping sell music. I mean, that there's a direct impact on the music industry that video games is having. I'm sorry, it's not coming to me off the top of my head where I saw that today, but some numbers that they've been tracking to sort of suggest that people's increased interest in these games, particularly Rock Band and Guitar Hero, that there's a, you know, sort of a through channel where you can track an actual impact on music sales in general.
Yeah, they've gotten me into a lot of bands, and usually not even, you know, I'm the kind of guy that when the Mission of Burma track pack comes out, I'm like, oh my God, everybody in the world, they're doing a Mission of Burma song. But then I play it and I'm like, wow, you know, Boston is pretty good. I didn't know that. So they help everybody out, I think. Cool. One of the other sort of weird effects about it too is that I will enjoy playing songs I would never enjoy listening to.
Right.
One example is I booted up Rockman 2 and I was like, oh God, I have to play this Paramore song. I hate Paramore. And now I cannot stop
song is
playing.
Fun, right? Yeah.
I come back to it like once a week. I'm like, maybe I'll just play that Paramore song once. It's cool. I'm not doing anything.
So yeah, Corvus, you just hit pay dirt here, didn't you? Corvus just sent me a quick message with a link to a story which suggests that 22% of music buyers, 35% of consumers under the age of 35 reported playing a music-based video game in the prior 3 months, and many of these gamers reported the gaming experience had a positive outcome, such as creating music discovery or triggering a digital music or CD purchase. From the MTV multiplayer blog. I should mention that I haven't played Audio Surf for a while, so I have to confess it's been a while. But when I was playing it shortly after it came out, I know I bought songs. I bought songs on iTunes just to try them out in Audio Surf. So even that game sold songs.
Go ahead, Spencer. Okay. No, sorry. I think there's a... I mean, this might be slightly unrelated, but I think there's a fundamental difference between, I'm just speculating, between that kind of thing on Audio Surf and in Rock Band. Because I think, you were saying, Corvus, about how Audio Surf, you had your doubts, but it adapted itself to even, the most obscure genre of music. It can do anything. But I think with Rock Band, the nature of the game is such that it's fundamentally more likely to work with certain genres than with others, so I think there's a limitation in terms of how far that can bring people into new music as opposed to something like Audio Surf.
Yeah, well, why don't we segue over to you, Spencer, and I think your game is quite a gear shift here.
In a sense, my game is Super Smash Brothers Brawl.
Huh. Oh really?
How about that? Eyebrows raised all over the internet.
Well, it's not so strange, I don't think. I think a lot of it is, I have to concede, that I was sort of weaned on Nintendo, in a sense, and it's difficult to avoid the euphoria of the nostalgia of playing Smash Bros., especially Brawl, which is such a compendium of Nintendo history. But on top of that as well, I think you did say... our favorite games of 2008, and certainly I wouldn't say Brawl is a game-changing game. I mean, I don't think I'd say it was the best game of 2008. I'm almost certain I wouldn't say that. But favorite, I've had the most fun playing it of any game I've played this year.
Do you like it better than its predecessor?
I have enjoyed it more than I enjoyed its predecessor, but like it better, I don't know. It's not so different, so...
Yeah. And have you played it online with people, or has it mostly been solo play or local competition?
I've done a bit of all three, and it's interesting to see how the dynamics changes all three. But I sort of have this theory that this, not to be too inaccessible, but this kind of touches on the conversation Corvus and I were having earlier. But I have this theory that online play is inherently less fulfilling in a sense than playing in a room full of friends or competitors.
And I definitely my best, that.
Yeah. And my best experiences with Brawl certainly have been in a room full of other people I want to beat.
Which is a similar dynamic in Rock Band too, isn't not? I mean, isn't it a lot more fun to play with people locally than over the internet, even though you can play?
Everything you do with your friends is more fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's a different dynamic, though, isn't it? I mean, no, admittedly, it's the same principle, but in Rock Band, is Rock Band not a fundamentally cooperative experience, whereas Smash Bros. Tends towards combative play?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so in your mind, why... It just seemed to me that after the game came out, there was a certain kind of... resistance to it is probably too strong a word, but... The hype was so tremendous, and I think so many of us had such a great time with the GameCube game. It seemed like it landed, and people sort of went, oh, and then, 5 minutes later, we moved on, and it didn't seem to make the splash that I thought it would make. Can you account for that?
Do you mean as a whole, or perhaps in a narrower blogger community?
I don't know. My sense was that it seemed that, well, I mean, the people that I speak to are probably not the average. Yeah, I it's hard to say what kind of slice of reality I have, but it seemed to me that the people were generally disappointed by it, or at least a little disappointed by it. It didn't live up to what they hoped it might be.
Sure. No, I do think there's some truth in that. And I think I did hear the phrase, I think, Melee 1.5 thrown around a lot.
Right.
And I certainly think there's truth in that. But the opposite side of the argument is, what more could they have done? There's a certain limitation inherently to the idea of a sequel to in any medium. I think perhaps there's more room for sequels in terms of video games than there are in terms of, not to get into a different argument, but films and other media. But I don't know. At the end of the day, didn't Brawl do everything it set out to do? And what more can we ask?
Did you play the single player, the sort of story mode as well?
I did, and actually I would fairly heavily criticize the subspace emissary mission mode. I thought that was dreadful.
Yeah.
I thought that was poorly designed and just not as entertaining as anything else you could do with the game.
Yeah. Yeah, we played it. I had this crazy idea that we would play it cooperatively because we love Nintendo sort of for way back, and my wife just one day said to me, we've got to stop this because this is just
It was torturous, wasn't it? It really was.
Truly terrible. Yeah.
I'm glad you've all echoed my opinion there, because I don't think I actually read anything on the game when it came out, and I thought maybe it had gone down, that particular section had gone down well as a new edition. I worried about that.
Well, we did have a lot of fun though playing against each other, and every time we have people over, if we're not playing Wii Sports, it's usually one of the favorites. If people are Nintendo types, if they see that, they typically want to give it a try. I will say this. I thought one of the smartest things they did was to make it possible to play it like on every controller that Nintendo's ever made.
That's true.
I prefer it on the old GameCube one. And
play it on a NES controller if you want. You know.
You probably could figure it out. Yeah. All right. Very cool. Thank you, Spencer.
Yeah.
That leaves us with Mr. Bruno and
yes.
His very interesting pick.
Well, I had actually emailed you about this before because I wasn't sure if I was cheating. I think if anyone's come to my website in the past, well, I guess since November, they would know that my game of the year is Mother 3, which actually came out in 2006. But it did not come out in English until this year, and it was not even officially released in English, but only a fan translation was released in English this year. So I guess you could say that's, you know, a little bit unorthodox, but that was definitely the game that I enjoyed most this year.
I presume you played Earthbound and you
yes.
came into the game with a certain set of experiences.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. How did that, does it feel like a true sequel, and did it meet your expectations? I presume it did.
I don't know if I would put it exactly that way, because it was a lot different from what I expected it to be. It definitely maintains the feel of the of Earthbound. I did not get very far into Mother 1, so I can't really speak to that. But yeah, it definitely feels like an Earthbound game or a Mother game, if you like. But it's very dark. It's a lot. How can I put this? It's familiar, but at the same time, it's almost like nightmarish or perverse in some way, in that it's just so much sadder, and I don't know. It seems like the focus has changed from sort of this, you know, Earthbound sort of being a parody of RPGs and very lighthearted in some ways, and with, you know, with serious moments, of course, to almost the reverse. Like, this is a very serious game with lighthearted moments that still has some elements that parody RPGs, but it's sort of come into its own. And, you know, it can stand on its own as a game without sort of, you know, you needing to read into it too much. I feel like more so with Earthbound, you could not enjoy that game to its fullest without already being experienced with RPGs. But I don't think the same is true of Mother 3.
It's a translation, obviously, that fans did. Does it seem like a professional game? I mean, is it the kind of game that looks like it's got the sort of fit and finish that games released by regular publishers would release?
Oh, absolutely. The person who translated the game is goes by Tomato in his fan community, is actually a professional Japanese to English translator who works on anime and I think a few video games. So the translation is really of the highest quality. There are a few points where you would, you know, think maybe Nintendo of America would censor this for a US release because, you know, they would want to keep a low ESRB rating. Whereas things, you know, I don't want to, I guess, go into details, but there are things that, you know, would probably fly in Japan that wouldn't fly here for, you know, the similar rating. But aside from those, like, you really would not notice that this is not an official release. It's, you know, as far as quality is concerned, it's great.
And did you go ahead and install it onto a DS, or did you play it on your computer?
I played it on a DS. This is something I've been trying to get to on my website. I've written some thousands of words on Mother 3 so far, but I haven't actually talked about the gameplay yet. One of the really interesting elements, and maybe I'm biased here because of Harmonix, but one of the interesting elements is that the battle system is actually rhythm-based. So the background music that you hear behind a given enemy will have some, you know, some beat to it that you, if you attack in time with the beat, you'll sort of score a combo. But, you know, the first few enemies are not very difficult. And then as you get later into the game, they'll throw, you know, songs with irregular meter or with break beats, or, you know, that leave out a beat every now and then, or that are changing tempo during the battle. So it's actually really, really difficult to get, you know, the maximum level of combo that you can earn. And I just thought it was great that there's sort of this layer of gameplay completely removed from, you know, the regular RPG things of managing your spells and your inventory and whatnot. Just sort of on top of it. It's like it's its own rhythm game. I'm actually not nearly as good at it as I should be, considering my job.
I had no idea.
It's strange. Like, it's not something that you would, you know, it would be a back of the box kind of advertisement, but it really does give the game a lot of, I wouldn't say replay value necessarily, but it's a lot more fun to, you know, say grind for experience when you're, you know, playing a rhythm game to do it.
Yeah. Well, one of my students in the RPG course that I just finished, actually, we just finished it, final exam today. We played Earthbound, and I agree with you that, you know, you really wouldn't want to spring that game on somebody who's never played an RPG, because it sort of helps to have a few under your belt to get all the jokes. But he was insistent that I play Mother 3. He found it terribly moving. I mean, he was, you know, he spoke in it in terms that I wish he, you know, had spoken in other games that I'd assigned him to play in the semester, because he just adored Mother 3 and felt that it was an important game that had a real emotional connection for him.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that.
Fascinating. Well, obviously, we've got four games here, Audio Surf, Rock Band 2, Mother 3, and Super Smash Brothers Brawl. Four favorites, and I guess we're all encouraging people to give them a try if they haven't already.
I did not expect to hear any of those games come up.
Isn't that crazy?
That's astonishing.
I didn't mention this on any of the other segments I've recorded, but I think I communicated this to you guys when we were emailing. I wasn't making that up about the, you know, 20 different games. I mean,
yeah, people that is incredible.
They gave me options, so I did. I mean, in the case, like, Corvus gave me a couple of other options, but I will say that two of the three options he gave me were unique options that no one else had chosen.
That's great.
Yeah, isn't it amazing?
What a year, though. I mean, there are people been naysaying about this year, and I can't understand. I think this has been a brilliant year for games.
I don't know. I mean, what do you suppose another way of thinking about it? I'd be curious to know what you think about this, Mitch, that perhaps evidence of what you were saying earlier, Mitch, is the fact that we don't have a favorite game that's we can unify around, or that we're all kind of scattered out there because maybe it was less impressive a year. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing when there is or is not a consensus. I mean, last year there were a couple of consensus choices. I mean, a lot of people would have said BioShock or Portal, and that was about it. And this year, if that's clearly not the case, it's probably good that games are appealing to more people. I mean, there's probably somebody out there who thinks Wii Fit is the greatest thing since sliced bread.
probably.
I don't know. It's strange to me that so many of us who ostensibly have similar taste cannot agree on what the best game of this year was. I mean, just the fact that you didn't get 20 people, or, you know, say 15 people telling you Fallout was the best game of the year, it sort of tells you that, to me, the best games this year were still problematic in a lot of ways, and that's okay, especially where they really tried to do something different. But I wouldn't say there were all that many unqualified successes either, if we're going to put our that kind of hat on right now.
Yeah. Wow.
But I would argue that that's good for the industry. I think that a big stumbling block for the industry has been this idea that there are two or three games that were the best and earned the most money. And we're seeing the games industry decentralize a lot. We're seeing a lot of independent developers, a lot of portals selling games that aren't huge publishers. And I think that's great. I think we need to see more games that a very small niche audience is passionate about. and fewer games that try to get everybody to like them, because in my opinion, the games where everybody likes them typically just don't do it for me, because they're missing something that actually hooks me as an individual.
Yeah.
And also, do we want to be a sort of a uniform culture, if we can use the phrase game culture? Isn't it a positive sign that things have diversified if we have no consensus?
I think so. And I think, well, a game that I think, one of the games that's most interesting to me this year was Braid. And we'll talk about that on another edition, because one of the other writers has chosen that. But I mean, Corvus, you corresponded, and I did, and various other people did with Jonathan Blow. That game, it just strikes me that the way we all responded to that game, even though some of us had big problems with it, or we wouldn't necessarily call it a favorite, it just generated so much interesting conversation that for a while it felt like this so-called community of gamers that we're all part of, we were really focused on this one game for a period of time. And some of it was in the form of arguments, some of it's form of defensiveness or whatever, but ultimately I thought it was a really cool thing that we did that.
Yeah.
I mean, is that how you see it, Corvus, or do you see it any differently than that?
I think that, I mean, and one of the reasons, I mean, anybody who's read my blog knows that I didn't enjoy Braid, and that I have some pretty fundamental differences in my idea about what games could be and should be than Jonathan Blow. But what Braid did was get us talking and get us to interact with it on a deep level, and continues to.
Yeah.
And that's pretty powerful.
Yeah. Isn't that the greatest praise for Blow, that we talked about it for that long?
I think so. And and of course, part of the reason is because he keeps talking about it. He keeps visiting our blog.
He's a wordy little fellow, yeah.
He's out there watching, you know, whenever we post about it. Even as recently as this week, someone, I'm sorry, I can't remember offhand who it was, wrote about it and got a visit from him.
I think that may be me. I don't know.
Was it you, Spencer?
Oh, I did post about Braid, and Blow did actually. I mean, I was rattling off what I thought about it, and Blow did come by and say, "Yeah, you're wrong. This is where you're wrong."
He doesn't seem to tell people they're right, though.
Have you noticed that?
No, actually, no. I heard. I don't know where. I can't tell you where I heard this. It's just escaped me. But I have heard a rumor that there were some people posting on forums about, you know, what Braid is, quote, about, unquote, and Blow was involved in the discussion, but he was mostly silent. And then eventually he emailed one guy saying, "You nailed it. You got it. You know what it's about."
Okay. Yeah, I know a guy who knew these people, whose aunt came back from Mexico with a rat. Yeah.
My theory is that Jonathan Blow is actually Pixel Vixen 707.
Oh, my God.
Puts it all to rest right there.
I was thinking about what you're saying, Michael, about I heard you trying to wrap it up there. I'm sorry.
No. Please.
I was just thinking, I actually did not play very many games that came out in 2008 this year. When I wasn't sure about Mother 3, and I offered Okami as another possible choice, but that didn't come out, at least not at first, in 2008. And then my actual, you know, only game that I could think of as a favorite from 2008 was No More Heroes. But I'm trying to think of, I probably could not list like five games that I played that actually came out in 2008 that I played this year.
Yeah,
actually, I've had a weird year like that. Close to the favorite games I played this year were BioShock, Portal, and Half-Life 2, and you know, none of them were released this year. So,
yeah, I mean, I kind of enjoy that we're, you know, not that, you know, that people talk about the sort of new release schedule, and we had a pretty relentless holiday season if you were trying to keep up with things. Yeah. And I just didn't even try. Like, I haven't played Fallout 3. I haven't played Fable 2. I haven't played Grand Theft Auto 4 or any, you know,
the big three games. I have played.
See, I haven't played any of those games, and I'll probably play them next year. But, you know, there's other games. Like, I'm playing Chrono Trigger again right now. But, you know.
Yeah, that's probably better than anything that came out this year.
Yeah, actually, like, yeah.
Saying that's probably the case.
Dan, you were saying, I'm sorry, I think I interrupted you.
Oh, no, I just, and in terms of the discussion we were having about, you know, how good of a year 2008 was, I don't know if that really reflects poorly on it or not, or if that's just sort of my own personal choice, but. Yeah, I just haven't played very many of the 2008 games. So maybe my choice is limited by that alone.
Well, I want to thank all of you very much for joining me. And I'll just real quickly, we'll kind of give me a little update on what you're up to. Corvus, there's a new roundtable topic around the corner.
Yes, there is.
Would you like to promote that a little bit, or do you know what it is yet?
I do, actually. For people who might not be aware, every month I host a roundtable topic and invite people to post on a central topic over the course of the month. And I'm always just super impressed with the responses I get. We've been talking a lot about family and gaming over the last few months. But I'm going to open the new year by inviting us to explore more the more literary aspects of storytelling through gameplay. We'll just tease with that.
Okay.
Ooh.
Very nice. Dan, I'm going to promote you for you so you don't have to do it. I want to encourage people to go check out your Mother 3 series, which you know that I've been avoiding because I haven't played it yet.
I recommend everyone do the same.
Yeah. But I admit that I've scanned one of them and read one of them. And, it's a terrific series. And in case people aren't aware, Cruz El Roy is also a lot about writing about game music, and Dan has written some of the best pieces that I've read on the net about video game music, and even including such things as transcriptions of pieces that you'd be familiar with in Ocarina of Time, for example, or games like that, stuff that take a certain amount of time and skill to be able to do. So I would highly recommend that you do that. And Mitch, have you done a top 10, or are you working on a best game sort of list thing at this point?
Yeah, I actually filed my top 10 this morning, so that's going to be both in the Phoenix and linked from my blog next week. But I am doing a whole 5-part year in review series at the blog over the next few days, so
beautiful.
Should be, I think, as I said, a lot of flame bait in there. I think there's a lot of things for people to get upset about, so I hope they will come by and check it out, especially the worst games of the year list.
Oh, okay.
I think it's a rule you have to put a big name title on there, right?
There's a couple, yeah. Yeah. It's not so bad. There's not a lot of sacred cows being slain on there, but it's kind of more fun than the best games list.
Oh, yeah. And more traffic, I'll bet.
That's the hope. That was the case last year.
And Spencer, your blog is probably the youngest of the group here, Noble Carrots, and so we should make sure people know about that. All of these that we've mentioned will be linked on Brainy Gamer when I release the podcasts, but just a quick word on that. And are you enjoying being a blogger?
Oh yeah, no, it's brilliant. It's interesting thinking up new things to talk about, though, and especially when I come across a game and then find out that lots of other bloggers have said exactly what I'm looking to say. Recently, I did an article on Sonic Unleashed, and it turns out Dan had written almost the same article just a few months ago.
I'm sorry about that.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I was looking to do in the new year. I want to talk some more about Braid, and I was looking to do a close reading of Dark Cloud, so that should be interesting.
Oh, cool. Oh, that would be, yeah, I'd love for you to do that. People ask me about that game. Some of my students wish that we'd play that game this semester, and I sort of embarrassed to admit that I hadn't played or didn't know much about it, so
wow, man.
That'd be great.
You've played, what was it? Is it? Oh, no, I forget the name of it. There's a DS dungeon crawling RPG, very traditional.
Etrian Odyssey?
That's it, yes.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I don't know how much you know about Dark Cloud. Presumably you know that it resembles that genre in some.
Yes, yeah. Because I like Etrian Odyssey and I'm interested in that, occasionally I like that, I should say. I'm not in the mood for that every day, but it was because of that that when I mentioned games like that, people will recommend other titles, and which is really cool. I really always appreciate that. But
yeah, no, me too. Yeah.
Well, gents, thank you very much. You've been great, and as always, your time and energy and enthusiasm for doing this is much appreciated. And I want to encourage everyone to check out the blogs, check out the links on my site, and play these games.
Thanks, Michael.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Okay. Bye-bye. A quick note on this segment of the podcast. We had originally scheduled Sandy Chen to join us from the Writer's Cabal, and she did. We had a very nice conversation, but unfortunately, I was speaking to her. She was calling from a cell phone at a Christmas party, and it was great for her to be willing to do that, and we thought we could make it work, and she sounded fine to me in my headphones, and my levels looked good, but when I went to listen to the recording, it was clear to me that the quality just wasn't good enough, and I was concerned that, you know, sustaining that conversation over time with Sandy, which was a really good conversation, it probably would drive you crazy with bad sound. So I'm hoping we can get Sandy back, maybe with a couple of other people who write for games, and that might be an interesting subject to cover for a podcast. But in the meantime, my guests in this segment are Chris Dahlin, Sparky Clarkson, and Matthew Gallant. And so, as you'll note, we sort of launch right into the conversation without the normal intro because, as I said, I had to edit that out. Anyway, apologies to Sandy and to my listeners, but I promise I'll get Sandy on, and I think you'll enjoy her very much. Off we go. Well, let's talk about games. And I want to, since we've got you revved up here, Chris, why don't we go with you? And before we go there, I just want to thank you. This has been a rough week for you, as many people know who've been following your tweets or your blog. You got socked pretty hard by an ice storm, and you had to leave your house and go stay in a motel and the whole thing. So I'm really happy that you made it through that, and I'm happy that you were able to make it tonight.
Oh yeah, I mean, and it's fine too. I mean, I like to complain, but we got out pretty good at the end of it. So it's, you know, it was no big deal. It's sort of it's annoying, but it was, you know, it was no big deal. I had my Nintendo DS, I had my BlackBerry.
So that's what yeah. We were worried about.
Exactly. Like, oh my God, how's he going to recharge those? What's
is he entertained?
Is he exactly?
Do you think he's reading a book?
Oh no. But thanks, yeah, and thanks for scheduling me later in the week for this. So,
yeah, no problem.
So should I start in?
Yeah, let's do it. Your favorite game of 2008.
Well, I'm here to talk about Braid, basically. I picked that, and I'll say that some of the lists I've published have Fallout 3 as my number one, and I'd say they're kind of co-equal, but it'd probably be more interesting to talk about Braid, because I feel like Fallout 3 has gotten a lot of appreciation, and people have kind of picked at it really well, and Braid had a lot of discussion as well, but I still kind of, and maybe you guys feel otherwise, but I feel like the critical reception has been strong, but also the reactions have been kind of mixed. People seem to agree that it's a really good game, but then there's so much controversy about, you know, does the writing and the epilogue and sort of the way that they bring the text into it work? Is there some message to it that we're missing? And then the fact that Jonathan Blow keeps coming to our blogs and sort of going back and forth with us, and sometimes in a way that people find abrasive. Has really kind of clouded the way people have received the game and maybe the way people think about the game right now. And so it's sort of an interesting case study in sort of how do we grapple with something like this.
Well, I mean, one aspect of that that may have exacerbated this is, of course, a large kind of plot element, the atomic bomb element. A lot of that was only discovered through the, you know, the optional stars side quest that happened after the main game. So I think, I mean, when a lot of people were talking about this game kind of, you know, 3 weeks or so after it was released, I don't think a lot of people had even been aware of the secret stars, and seeing that later and then, you know, having Jonathan Blow say more or less that, you know, yes, this is a game kind of about the atomic bomb and its creation, from what I understand.
My impression was that Blow had sort of said that's not all that there is to it.
I don't think he's vouched for that. Sorry to interrupt. Yeah.
Oh, I must have misheard that then.
It's surprising because he shows up a lot that there's still some confusion.
Well, he's very cryptic.
That's sort of the just to say, yeah, that's the frustration, is that it's sort of like he'll shoot down specific theories but doesn't want to explain what the answer is, because that would be defeating the point to like sit there and lay the whole thing bare. But at the same time, I think he doesn't seem to like when people get it wrong or misinterpret or especially misconstrue what he did or what he's thinking. And so that's sort of, we just get in this thorny area.
I wonder about your take on this, Chris, and I pitch this to Matthew and Sparky as well, that this came up on an earlier segment that we did a couple nights ago recording for this the Gamers Confab thing. One thing you could say about the whole Blow and Braid episode is that it centered the gaming community's attention on a game in a way that a lot of us wish that we could do more often. That we just seem to blow through these we seem to just plow through these games so fast, and a game lasts in our minds and in the sort of blogosphere and in game journalists writing for 10 minutes, and it's always on to the next thing. And, you know, Braid really got us to stop and slow down and pay attention to a game and have a sustained conversation with the creator involved. That, to me, was one of the best moments, I thought, of the year in terms of games.
I would agree with that, and I like the fact that you had that series and you guys were having a conversation on the blog, and then with people coming into the comments to join that conversation. I wish we could do that more often, and one example would be Left 4 Dead. We're all talking about it, but we haven't sort of put together a confab around that yet, which is almost a shame. And I know that probably 90% of the conversation would be, oh my God, do you remember
strategy.
What happened with the tank setup? Yeah. Yeah. But there's so much to it.
Mitch Kerpata was one of the first ones to write about Left 4 Dead, and you look at the comments and it's all, oh, did you know about this, you know, secret shack, and did you know you can go defend the second house of the barn, and it's all kind of strategies like that.
Yeah, and anyone who's played,
of course, as you're saying.
Exactly, and anyone who's played the game just once, and I know Offworld did a good job of covering that too, that it teaches you so well what the elements are. You play it just once and then you're totally riveted by that kind of conversation. But I wish we did that more often, to your point about Braid, that had those kinds of exchanges and had that kind of, and also instead of maybe just going off on our own blogs and writing our thoughts, which I do see people doing for Far Cry 2 and for Fallout 3 and Fable 2, but to have that kind of back and forth right there is really nice.
Yeah. The point I was going to make was regarding Left 4 Dead. I wrote about the sort of the issue of pacing in games yesterday, thinking about, in this case, Persona 4. But someone came by and noted that, if I want to think about pacing, I really ought to look at Left 4 Dead. That there are lessons in terms of game design pacing, and we don't really talk about pacing in games very often. I agree. I mean, Left 4 Dead seems to me to be practically a clinic on how to deal with pacing and be able to even respond to player choice and, you know, the way that players sort of push the game forward themselves. Even in that environment, the pacing works.
And having it generated in a nonlinear way.
Yeah.
They're all making algorithms to figure out, okay, the ammo goes here, the tank pops here, if you stay around here for too long, the smoker pops behind you. I mean, just amazing how they managed to kind of figure that all out.
Yeah.
And not even, just emergently.
Those moments in between things, where it's been too long since you've seen the tank, the tank is, he's coming, and the longer he doesn't come, the more it feels like he ought to be coming. I mean,
it's all lizard brain. It's all, purely, it's not just we're sort of sitting there trying to think through it. It's like, oh my God.
All right. So Chris, your game is Braid. And I will say this, people were very kind in sending me their recommendations and gave me maybe two or three to choose from. So I we didn't have any repeats. But if I had to collect the games and find the one game that was mentioned by the most people, it turns out that it was Braid.
Oh, really?
Huh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So for what that's worth.
I'd said that, I felt like maybe it was a little underappreciated, and it is good to hear that, and I am seeing it on a lot of best of the year lists. It didn't get forgotten, over the course of November when 8 million games came in and that we all fell in love with. I guess I just personally feel like we didn't quite, I just don't know if we really nailed it, and it's sort of a challenge to us as a community, and kind of a challenge that Blow laid to us, is that that whole exchange we had back and forth about, did we get it wrong? Are people misinterpreting it? But then he won't explain what it is. And is he full of shit? And should we be, maybe challenging him more or doing him more justice? It's
what other game would we worry about getting it wrong, I suppose? To a certain extent, we kind of throw out ideas a lot in the blogging community. And, maybe someone else, another blogger, will come criticize your idea. But this is one of the first times, at least I've ever seen, someone coming along and say, no, that's not what I meant. For what that's worth, for better or for worse.
One guy
I think it matters that there's one guy at this at who
I
is
suppose,
this game.
Yeah. It's a little different when, you know, I saw one common thread, you know, Clint Hawking came to talk about Far Cry 2, and that was really cool. But I suppose even then, but it was designed as a team.
You can identify the creator that really feel like you owe them to get it right, which is strange because most of the time it's a lot more people that you would think, I owe all these people to get it right. But when it's one guy, he can come in and call you an idiot. So,
yeah.
Right, it's a looser vision, and I think a lot of games also don't have a strict meaning. I mean, I'm sure that, like, if you write something about why the Declaration of Independence is in Fallout 3, I don't think Todd Howard is personally going to come in and say, no, you see, here's the design document, you're just so far off on this. And also probably would have more tolerance for failure, and I think maybe it's that Blow feels that people didn't get what he was doing with it, but I think it's also because I interviewed him at length, and it sort of didn't... You know, there was some back and forth after that about his feelings on whether it was accurate or whether it really did the job. I guess I just feel like we came in contact with someone who was really willing to have this conversation, sort of willing to have this conversation with us, but then we never really worked it out. Maybe if we'd all been sitting in a room together, maybe at GDC we'll run into him and we all sit down and kind of reach an understanding about, okay, well, this is how we work with your game. This is how we work with talking to you and get your ideas out of you. And this is how you communicate to us, where you don't hand us all the answers, but you help us help you. I don't know. But I feel like I just feel like we didn't get that resolved. And he's still popping up on, I'm blanking on who just wrote about him. But,
Spencer
Greenwood. One of the Oz bloggers, as I call them. Yeah.
Oz bloggers. So, yeah, Spencer actually, I spoke with him just last night, and he mentioned that. We talked about it briefly in the confab. The thing about it, though, to me is that this should be a dialogue which says two ways to me, right? That's not just a one-way thing. And I think, for me, I think Blow really taught us some things, or at least he tried to teach us some things about how to see a game or how to think about a game, to put a different frame or a different lens sort of on a game that helps us. So I appreciate that. What I'm interested in is if he learned anything from us. And if in his next game, anything that we've said to him, and a lot of us have been very forthcoming about, hey, this is a terrific game. I didn't like it for these reasons, but I liked it for these reasons or whatever. You know, does any of that go into the processing or the thinking in his next design? Because as much as I admire everything he did, he seems a little resistant to suggestions of sort of different ways of thinking. I may be totally reading him wrong. If I am, I apologize. But his next game, I'm curious to see if he brings into it some result that comes out of these conversations from the audience's perspective.
That's a really good perspective on it.
Yeah, Braid 2.
Yeah, exactly. I really like that attitude.
Oh, I hope not.
the Braid puzzle. 2 Unleashed.
But it does speak to, like, the playtesting. Like, I'm sure he playtested I know that he did in beta testing, get all the puzzles right and all the jumps right. But, you know, does he sit there and say, okay, do you get all the levels? Oh, yeah, this is great. It works great. Okay, well, did you get the part about how I read a lot of Daniel Dennett? No, I didn't get that at all. Like, maybe that's the extra step he needs to take next time.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Chris. And if you haven't played Braid, you know, anybody that's listening to this, regardless of what I or anybody else has said about, you know, nitpicking about this or that, you really ought to play the game. I mean, you need to take a look at it, if for no other reason than to just sort of be part of this conversation. It's worth it, I think.
Is it $15?
Oh, something
like the
that.
Penny Arcade comic. You know, people pay $15 for a burrito and a quesadilla, but
that's right.
Braid is well worth the cost of a quesadilla.
The burrito doesn't argue with you, though.
Should be coming out for PC too at some point, but I don't know if they've announced that yet. But yeah, the $15 thing, that was the other funny part of the whole story. Everyone was so upset about the price, and it's like this incredibly brainy, brilliant thing that comes out, and everyone's like, that's a lot of money.
That's absurd. All right, well, why don't we toss it over to you, Sparky, and you can tell us about your favorite game.
Well, I guess it's appropriate to follow up Braid with this one, because this game also is from... It's also identified by its developer. My favorite was No More Heroes by Suda51 and Grasshopper. And it was for the Wii, which is coming to be widely reviled, I feel, among the hardcore crowd. Unfairly, to some extent, because there are mature games on the Wii, and this was an excellent example of one that was very intelligent, was saying something interesting about games, I thought, and, you know, was just actually a whole lot of fun to play with, yes, the motion controller. So there was a little bit of waggle going on, and it wasn't terrible. So, you know, what I most enjoyed about this game was that it wasn't as full textured as you could get on an Xbox 360. There was this vast open world, and it was just an open world. There was nothing in it. or there wasn't a lot in it. And you walk around and you're like, why isn't there very much stuff in this world? And why doesn't the world react to me? And the world doesn't react to the main character because nobody cares what the main character thinks. and the world is empty because it's a game. And if you start forgetting that it's a game, or you start doing things to make it look like it's not a game, then all that bothers you is the things that remind you that it's a game. All that bothers people about Fallout are the things that remind them it's a game. But it is a game. All that bothered people about GTA 4 was the things that reminded them that it was a game. But it's a game. And this is what I think Suda is saying. It's a game. When you play a game, remember that it is a game.
I'm really glad you picked No More Heroes as your, as the one in this confab. I actually sent Michael two picks, and No More Heroes is one of them. So, absolutely one of my favorite games of the year. And what I loved about it was that it never stopped surprising you.
Yeah.
There was just something interesting all the time. The moment you thought you had the game figured out, you know, they'd manage to top the last boss fight. They'd make someone even more ridiculous.
Yeah.
Or they'd make, it kept going over the top of over the top.
Absolutely. By the ending. And then just another great Wiimote mini game that was a ridiculous thing to do. And I just loved it in that respect.
Do you remember
when
he
falls asleep on the subway and he has that mini game in the arcade?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I love
that. I thought that was brilliant.
That
I
was
loved it.
Truly. Do you remember the moment that you first discovered, unless somebody spoiled it for you, the cell phone?
Oh, that blew me away. that was incredible.
Yeah, when it just, you know, oh my gosh, it's there. I picked it up and I held it to my ear.
And you immediately know to do that just from reflex.
Yeah.
It's like a Pavlov response, you know.
Well, the odd thing is I don't even have a cell phone. I detest them. So it was something of an odd reflex.
But, you know, you said something, though. You mentioned other games that people have problems with because they don't take into consideration enough that they're games. I mean, it does seem to me, though, that games like Fallout 3, yes, it's a game, but it tries very hard in some ways to not be a game. Or, I mean, to not let you think about the fact that it's a game, whereas No More Heroes is really all about that, right? I mean, it's so much about itself.
I would be Suda as sort of critiquing the very idea of a Fallout.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, enjoying the fact that you have this vast open world, but critiquing the idea that what we should do is try and make everyone forget that it's a game. I don't know. I think there's something to be said for the distance and for structure being evident, which is why I said all that pretentious shit about Mondrian.
but it was valuable. I mean, I thought that as a way of seeing, which I think the game is in some ways about that. It's about, you know, a way of seeing a game world, a way of seeing, you know, how to use a controller, how to experience a game, how to tell a story. I mean, it's a really kind of fundamental, deconstructed, artsy game. It's
absolutely
ambitious in that way. Like few games are.
It's something that Suda51 has just somehow he manages to nail every time. I loved Killer 7, love No More Heroes. Really looking forward to, you know, I think we're getting another game by him this year, Moon, Rain, and Sun, something like that. It's on the DS.
Mm-hmm.
And just hard to be disappointed by him. He just somehow manages to take the preconceived notions about what video games are that we were perhaps not even aware of, you know, just completely assumed, not even think of, and turn them around in interesting ways. Just fantastic.
Is anybody at all worried about the new relationship with EA? Is he going to, in order to strike this deal with EA or sort of work with them, is he going to alter his approach, or are they going to insist that he alter his approach, or are we not worried about that?
I'm somewhat worried that they're going to try and force him into a box, and he's going to give them the finger, and then there's going to be a problem. But I don't think he would allow them to dictate.
Yeah, wouldn't that be the kind of case where they knew what they were getting going in, and he's sort of a reliable property? I mean, from a balance sheet perspective, and I don't know any of the numbers, but it seems like, you know, you say he's got this fan base, he's got this appeal, you know, going in, he's going to be making these weird games and probably confusing people. But, you know, I mean, the Flaming Lips have been on the Warner Brothers for years. I mean, you just sort of, there's room for these acts sometimes.
Good point. Well, I'm glad that you suggested that one, Sparky. Yeah, that's definitely one of my favorite games, too. And when I was writing about it originally, when it came out, that to me probably was the most challenging game to write about. In some ways, for me anyway, it was a great fun to write about, but you just couldn't approach it like you're used to approaching games. It just sort of challenged you to sort of rethink, gee, how do I even want to write about this? Like, how do I even want to say
that one in Braid, No More Heroes in Braid, both games that I barely wrote about either of them, just because both of them, you need to wrap your head around them and really give it some thought. I mean, months after you played the game, it was still kind of on the back of your mind saying, what exactly did I just play? What was that?
Well, we will pass it over now to Matthew, and you're going to wrap this little segment up for us with your favorite game, which, if you follow your tweets or blog over time, I think many of us would already know what this game is, because you are pretty crazy about this game, I think.
Yeah.
But I'll let you announce it.
My pick for Game of the Year was Sins of a Solar Empire. Have any of you had a chance to play it?
You know, I haven't.
Oh, darn.
It's on my list now.
I regret that I have not.
Oh, well, that's good. I'll be able to tell you a little about the game, maybe sell it a little if you haven't had a chance to try it. A little bit of context. What is really neat about the game, considering how good it is that it was made by Ironclad Games. As far as I'm aware, it's their first release, made for under $1 million, you know, little Vancouver company. And considering all this, considering the scale of it, if you're not aware, it's a 4X style game, so kind of civilization, exploration, conquering different worlds, married with real-time gameplay, like, you know, any RTS, StarCraft, let's say. But what's great about it is how they managed to just nail the pacing and also the scope of it. It's just incredible to be able to see how big your empire can get in the game and how they managed to put in tools so that it never feels overwhelming to be fighting 10 different battles throughout your empire all over the place. As Michael said, on Twitter, this is probably the game I mentioned the most, trying to convince people to play, because it's beautiful. Being able to zoom out and see, you know, 10 different planets, all of them, you know, things happening between them, and then zoom right in as close as you could want to, seeing one battle unfolding between a couple of ships. It's a game that, yeah, I think is best described in these kind of just emotional terms, because it really is a lot of fun to play.
I hate doing this because it's not fair to games to compare them to other games and say, well, if you like this, then you'll love this. When you talk about the game, I almost always think about XCOM. That I always think, well, it's obviously not the same kind of game exactly, but the way you talk about it is a lot the way that XCOM fanatics talk about that game. Did you play XCOM?
Yeah, I have played XCOM.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's not at all the same game or the same kind of game necessarily, but it sounds to me like it has that way of kind of drawing you in and keeping you there in that a certain kind of, you know, outer space setting.
And certainly similar to XCOM, it's the kind of game where if you take, you know, a boat and tell it to move, you know, 3 inches to the left, it's going to take 5 minutes. It's similar in pacing to XCOM. Mm-hmm. I guess the way I would describe how it is similar to XCOM is that imagine XCOM, but you know, that's the pulled back view. If you could then zoom in as close as you want and then see a boat on the water, you know, firing missiles and watch them flying through the air and hit something, that would be what Sins of a Solar Empire is like.
Is it, you know, here's a question, because I'm not good with real-time strategy games, and I think that's why I've kind of punted on this, even though I've heard people raving about it all year and heard you raving about it. Is it is it something that like an idiot like me could jump into, or is it something that you should work your way up to appreciate? And to, and maybe as one reference point, I got through the space section of Spore, which is a little, sounds a little like it, but Spore's probably lighter weight, or...
Unfortunately, I avoided Spore in the end. Something I'm meaning to pick up, but...
I don't think you missed much, but that's...
that's what I've heard, unfortunately.
Yeah, but so is it an advanced RTS, or is it...
I don't... Like, I've heard comparisons of the game to Supreme Commander, just in the scope, but I hear that's actually a very kind of difficult strategic game. Why... I mean, it's not the kind of game your grandmother could play, unfortunately. It's very much built on menus and built on, you know, having a little bit of understanding of how RTS games and 4X games work in terms of strategy. But from a certain perspective, it isn't too bad because the AI is actually fantastic. Some RTS games, you know, you really have to get in close and tell the guys exactly what to do. You actually are very hands-off in Sins of a Solar Empire. You just tell your ships to, you know, the, engage the enemy here, and there's very little micro. It's all kind of, they'll automatically use their abilities, they'll automatically take strategies. You can actually, if you want, just select a group of enemies and hit retreat, and they'll just move to the closest star system. So there's lots of things built in so that all you have to worry about is the macro. If that answers your question, I'm not sure.
No, that's cool. I've been playing Multiwinnie, and I like that about it as well, that you just sort of take the little guys and just say, just go over there, and they automatically start shooting everybody and manning their battle stations, and yeah.
I actually picked that game up not too long ago, but I haven't had a chance to check it out, but I've heard great things about Multiwinnie.
It's a hoot. It's so fast. It's and I think in my review I actually said it was like Left 4 Dead, because it's so quick, and it's so capricious, and it's so... kind of, you can strategize, but these things can completely upend the battle for you, and then even if you're ticked off by that, it's over in 10 minutes and you can start again. So
no, that definitely the polar opposite of Sins of a Solar Empire. Unfortunately, the game's there, yeah. You know, 5 or 6 hours at least, and kind of the opposite in the fact that if you're being attacked at a planet and you have a group of spaceships, you know, 4 planets away, even though it takes 20 minutes in real time for them to get there, they might actually be able to save the planet by the time they get there. It's that kind of slow pacing battle. But yeah, I'm not sure if I've sold it well, but it's the only game this year that has had me kind of unintentionally staying up until, you know, 4 in the morning. It's the one more turn syndrome. Oh yeah, but it's the one more turn syndrome without the turns. So you're screwed.
Well, I'm struck by the fact that here again in this confab that we're talking about small developers, and you'll find that when you listen to the other ones, if you listen to the other ones, that this is kind of a through line. A lot of us seem to have had a nice year of gaming thanks to smaller or smallish developers.
Definitely.
That's nice to hear, especially after the last month, because it was good to have an indie focus for most of the year, and there were a couple months that were so slow that there was really nothing else going on. And then November hits, and you just have to be like, wow, Fable 2, Fallout 3. I think personally the reason I had trouble picking my number one between Braid and Fallout 3 is that one of them is everything I would want in an indie game and a personal vision, and the two guys involved, I mean, the art as well is so fantastic. But Fallout 3 is the kind of game that I love that is only possible on that scale. With all the history and the technology they could leverage, and then the team they had, and then all the money that went into it, November was like the big budget month. But maybe now it can come back to it. And I hear people talking about like the interactive fiction competition. You know, the top games in that were really strong this year. So yeah, maybe we can get back to thinking indie for the next couple months.
Yeah, absolutely.
And not only indie, but this is also the year for downloadable games for you know, World of Goo and Braid and Geometry Wars and stuff.
Yeah, and if it, other than Little Big Planet, for me as a PS3 owner, it was the downloadable content that made that system worth owning this year.
Absolutely. Right. Pixel Junk Eden, I imagine, for you.
Oh, baby. I love that game.
You're playing it right now, aren't you?
Yeah, I had to you know, Lee Alexander elbowed me out of the way for that one. She chose that one for her favorite.
Oh,
so, yeah, that it. I just love that game, and but other things too. That artsy kind of game that they've kind of tried to establish a niche for on that system, as opposed to the kind of Xbox Live downloadable games. I've appreciated those, and I think by and large they've worked pretty well.
Absolutely.
Well, I want to thank all of you for joining me and for discussing your favorite games with me. And before we go, and I wish you happy holidays and all the rest of it, I want to, you know, quickly just check in with you to see about your blogs and about what's going on for you next. Chris, your end of the year review stuff is coming out, top 10 lists, those sorts of things, I presume.
Mm-hmm. I'm doing one with Variety that's going to run over the next 2 weeks. Ben Fritz organized it, and Lee Alexander and Tom Chick are also going to be in there. And I've seen the content, and there's some really neat things, and Tom Chick's list is very cool, has some really neat picks and some really neat write-ups. And then just, you know, my blog has been really sporadic lately, so it's mainly just about keeping up with freelance assignments and trying to think of what's next. So,
well, we'll definitely keep an eye out for the Variety piece. I know Lee mentioned it as well. She seems pretty excited about it. So, yeah, definitely we'll keep an eye out for that.
Cool.
And I mentioned Sandy Chen, obviously, from the Writer's Cabal. I'll put a link up to her site. But she's been doing some really interesting writing recently. And in particular, she's interested in narrative, as you might expect.
Sure.
And some of her best posts, and I think some of them are also written by her partner, Ann Toole, recently. Just, you know, really good reading, well worth reading. And I encourage everybody to head over there and check those out. Matthew, what are you up to? You have anything in mind for...
Nothing I've written this month is probably worth reading. I've been extremely busy just finishing up school, massive exam period. Yeah. I have some minor things coming up, but yeah, I've been kind of gathering ideas. So stay tuned, but nothing worth reading yet.
It'll explode. It'll come in an explosion of creativity.
Absolutely.
All at once.
Tidal wave. Destroy everything.
Well, Sparky, I saved you to the end because I was really intrigued with the idea that you pitched to me, and you've already started pursuing it on your blog. You're calling it your critical thinking compilation, and I wonder if you might just talk about it briefly, what you're up to with it, and if we can kind of head people your way and let them know that this is a possible series kind of thing if there's interest in it.
Yeah, so basically it's because I'm lazy. is the origin of the idea, because I expect that with Fallout, as with a bunch of other games that I play, I'll come back to it and have new thoughts about it. And when I do, I don't want to sort of spend hours and hours digging up all the great posts I have read and remember reading, but don't remember exactly who said what. So I thought that in order to sort of keep things around for myself, I put together a post that just compiled a whole bunch of links to different people's takes on the game. And the way I decided to sort of arrange it was to try and put together a sort of story about what people have been talking about. So rather than just having, you know, Iroquois Pliskin has this great post about the open world, I wanted to try and arrange things so that similar ideas came together. It just ends up as sort of a long essay covering a couple of different topics that tries to sort of put ideas together and put opposing ideas next to each other so that people can sort of go into the back and forth to sort of create a conversation along the lines of what you and Iroquois did with your sort of letters to each other, except that I'm not writing letters to anyone.
That's fantastic.
You should definitely go. I mean, it'll be linked on the blog, but you should definitely check this out. I mean, he started it with Fallout 3, and you say you're not writing, you know, so much, but I mean, it's actually quite an ambitious thing you're doing here, and there's plenty of your own. I mean, pulling this together and making it into a kind of making it cohesive is no small task, if you ask me. But
well, it was an adventure because. I started with a completely different arrangement. I was just like, everybody's it's going to be names in alphabetical order and then the link. And I read the things, and then I was like, well, I'll put them together according to ideas. And I wrote up like three ideas, one of which showed up in this post, because I read through all of these posts again in order to put it together, and I found ideas I hadn't recognized before when I started reading them next to each other. So, you know, I was very, very surprised to see that there was a real thread of people talking about things you don't know in the game, about your ignorance. You know, Spencer Greenwood has this post about how little information the Pip-Boy gives you, and then Crash has this, you know, little story about how he sort of got lost on one of the quests, and that was one of the moments when the game sort of made itself for him. And then Travis McGill has this post about the reason that you feel so free to explore is because you don't know what the main quest is about until fairly far along. And, you know, if you knew what was at stake, maybe you would move through the main quest faster. But by keeping that from you, you're sort of free to explore. So there was this thread about not knowing things that I hadn't, that I didn't know was there until I started putting things together. So it was an interesting experience to sort of make the post.
I'll just say I had an idea a little like that when I was seeing the Left 4 Dead coverage. It was so spread out that I was, it would have been really neat to see that together in some of the stories people were telling. Like Daniel Purvis had one of my favorites about being up there and like the one guy that got away just through sheer cowardice and luck and left everyone else alone, and like all these amazing stories, and try to stitch them together. And I really admire that you're doing that, because it's one of the things that strikes me is there's so much great blogging, so much great writing that people are doing, and a lot of it is conversational and doesn't really need to be refined or anything. It's like what we would be talking about if we were all at the same bar together. But I'd love to see ways of kind of bringing people together and stitching that together more effectively. And that's a great idea.
You have to imagine some of these posts. I mean, we talk a lot about, you know, talking about games after the 3 weeks after the release period. I know David Carlton on Twitter was recently saying, oh, you know, hey, I just finished No More Heroes in, say, November. Where are all the good posts writing about it? Where all these posts I missed? And it was interesting to go back, and the post he wrote up about his experience with No More Heroes, I think, had all these links to, you know, these posts that were written in February and March. And it's just a great extension, I suppose, Sparky, of what you were saying of kind of bringing together lots of posts. You have to imagine someone playing Fallout next year might, you know, find your post and say, hey, look at all this great stuff that I wouldn't have found if it wasn't aggregated in this way. So, I mean, that's just a fantastic idea.
Yeah, we'll just call it a thinking man's Metacritic, Sparky, and we'll, which is completely, insulting.
I don't know about that. I'm not even sure there is such a thing as a thinking man's
Yeah, I was going to say.
Well, anyway, it's certainly worth doing. And I think you were initially wondering if people would think it was worth doing. And I hope you're hearing us say that it is. And I hope other people tell you that it is. And, if you feel interested in pursuing it, I hope you will. So there's a vote of confidence. Anyway, gentlemen, thank you very much. This has been terrific. And I want to wish you all happy holidays. And again, thanks for spending time with me. The games are Braid, Wizard 101, No More Heroes, and Sins of a Solar Empire, courtesy of my guests Chris Dahlin, Sandy Chen, who we said goodbye to earlier, Sparky Clarkson, and Matthew Gallant. So thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
My pleasure. Take care, and we'll talk again soon.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.